Welcome to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. I'm Mike Papali, and I'm the president and founder of In a Heartbeat, a nonprofit organization with a mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. I went into sudden cardiac arrest at age 17 and have been living with heart disease for over a decade. This podcast will dissect the physical and emotional obstacles of living with heart disease and how to overcome them. I am inviting you to join me on my personal journey of living as a heart disease patient. The ultimate goal of this podcast is to help heart disease patients of all ages live a long and normal life. Welcome everyone to the next episode of A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. A Big Heart is powered by In a Heartbeat. In a Heartbeat is a nonprofit organization with the mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. This is done by donating AEDs, providing CPR and AED training, raising money for research projects, providing support to patients, and offering free ECGs to children, teens, and young adults. To learn more about In a Heartbeat, visit www.inaheartbeat.org. All right, welcome back, podcast family. I appreciate you being here for another great episode of A Big Heart. Just to give you a quick update on what we have going on within A Heartbeat, we have another heart screening coming up this weekend in Connecticut, and we have about 250 more kids ready to come get their free EKGs. You know, we're really, really excited about it. I think it's going to be a great event and potentially save some lives. Obviously, we hope that nobody has an abnormal EKG, but if somebody does, it's completely why we're doing the work that we're doing. So we're really excited about it. We have another special guest this week on the podcast. You know, we've heard a ton of great stories, and this week we have Bob Smith, who was born with aortic stenosis and needed emergency surgery when he was just 2 weeks old. And he's going to talk about his lifelong journey with heart disease, how he's an avid rock climber, and how he's overcome some of the ups and downs that have happened throughout his heart disease journey. So here he is, Bob Smith. All right, we now welcome on a very special guest. We have Bob Smith, who has a lifelong heart disease journey. Bob, thanks so much for taking the time to be here today.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, so Like I just mentioned, your journey started at a young age, and I'm sure some of it you might not remember as clearly, some of it you do, but I'd love for you to just kind of start from the beginning and talk to us about your whole heart disease journey from the start.
Right. So I am 32 years old now. So I was born in 1988. And at that point, when I was born, my doctors knew I don't know how far in advance of my birth they knew, but it was known right away that I had a severe aortic murmur, and they didn't quite know what was going on. So they could hear that right away, and they knew something was going on. So, you know, right away they knew I had aortic stenosis, and kind of just sent me home from the hospital. And they're like, we think that you're going to be okay. They did some, I would assume, scans and got the size of my aorta. And they're like, okay, there's blood flow coming out. It looks good. We don't know what's going to happen. So they gave my parents kind of like a list of symptoms. And they said, if you know, his lips start turning blue or fingernail beds are blue, you know, go to the hospital as quickly as you can. So I think I was about at home for about 2 weeks when I developed those symptoms. And at that point, my dad rushed me back to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So I went to CHOP. And they did an emergency valvuloplasty there. So they took from my artery in my leg, they took and did a little, the valvuloplasty basically opened up that aorta to help out the stenosis so that I could get that blood flow back into my body again. And at that point, they kind of didn't know exactly how long that was going to last. They said, hey, we think that it's, you know, saved my life at the time. And then they're like, we think it'll last a while, but we don't really know. It kind of is patient by patient. So we'll see what happens. So I basically from that point on didn't have any procedures through most of my life, and was just going in for checkups. They wanted to monitor basically how the valve was doing, how it was performing, the pressure inside my heart versus what was coming out of the heart. And basically from the time that I was a couple weeks old until I was 27, there was no procedure. It was basically just a yearly checkup of kind of like walking in, having the doctor monitor my heart, and then coming back out. A lot of EKGs and echocardiograms to just kind of monitor everything. And then in 2016, I went to my yearly checkup, and I figured it was going to be one more of those, like, hey, everything looks good. Have fun. I'll see you in a year. But the doctor came into the room and he said, hey, like the pressure in your heart has maintained a certain level. And I forget exactly what that number was. So I don't want to try a number here, but I forget exactly what that number was. But he said it was maintaining for the last 6 or 7 years at this level. And last year, that pressure doubled. So he said, we basically, the stenosis had worsened, and he said it's time to get surgery, which was really shocking at the time because I was expecting to go in and have the same conversation we always had. And then so he said, no, we need to kind of get you into surgery as soon as possible. And that was in maybe April of that year. And I'm a teacher, so I kind of asked them if we could hold off until June at the end of my school year. And they said there's no problem with that, holding off for another 4 or 5 weeks after this was discovered. So I had surgery 2016, June 1st of 2016, where they went in and replaced my aortic valve. At that point, I mean, I had that severe stenosis, and I also had a bicuspid aortic valve. So they replaced that. And during the CT before surgery, when they scanned my heart, they looked at my ascending aorta and realized that there was a very small aneurysm there. So while we were doing this open heart surgery, we figured that it would be a good idea to replace the aortic valve and the ascending aorta so that we could just do one procedure and not have to go back in to do anything else. And that's kind of led me to where I am today. Today, I have a mechanical valve, and I am living with my only medication is warfarin, and an 81 milligram aspirin every day.
So yeah, so just I mean, I have a bunch of questions just hearing, because this is like for my instance, I didn't get diagnosed till I was 17, but for you, it was like I'm sure you had a point in your life. And I don't know what age it was, but you were probably pretty young where your parents had to explain to you that you had something wrong with your heart, and these are some things to be aware of. And I'm just kind of curious, like as a young person, like what that's like kind of having in the back of your mind that, you have something wrong with your heart, maybe what your limitations were. It's hard enough kind of growing up through school, kind of like how it was kind of being the guy that had heart disease in school. So just kind of curious about that, kind of like those younger years and what that was like adjusting to it.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't remember a specific time where it was like I didn't know and now I know. It was kind of just something I knew all of the time. And yeah, I had some limitations as a kid, but I did not have very many. So I basically lived a pretty normal life. I think the restrictions that I had in place were just that I was told not to do very much anaerobic exercise, so not a lot of weightlifting. I couldn't do a lot of like extreme pushing or anything like that. But in general, I didn't have very many restrictions. And I think my closest friends knew that I had a heart condition. Just because I thought it was a really cool thing, because my murmur was so loud that you could hear it without a stethoscope. So you could just be like really close, like probably ear up to my chest, and like you could hear the murmur. So just hear it, I think that was like, every once in a while, I'd be like, hey, do you want to hear something cool? And then, like, I would kind of show it off a little bit. But in general, I had no symptoms, and I didn't have. Just kind of like, I think when I was young, I was like, oh, I'd like to play ice hockey. I'd like to lift weights. I'd like to do, and at that point, I was like, Oh yeah, I'm being restricted from doing these things. But in general, it didn't feel like too much of a restriction. It felt just like normal life. Like I don't exert myself. And because I didn't have any symptoms, I really just kind of knew that I should be looking out for like passing out or any of that type of stuff. But I really didn't have too much that gave me an abnormal experience as a kid.
That's great. That's great. But I think what's interesting though is it's so important. I talk about this with everybody. We talk about like symptoms. I feel like so many people are still like unaware, or they don't associate heart disease symptoms with heart disease symptoms, if that makes sense. So like it's always like if you're a kid and maybe you have chest pain or shortness of breath, you attribute it to, or not just kids, adults too. You always attribute it to something different. And I think it's so important for people to be aware of those symptoms and just have them in their mind. Like, so it's like, hey, maybe this is my heart. And if it is, I need to at least get it checked. And maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's something. But kind of going ahead now, you had, to 2016 when you had the surgery, I'm just, you're kind of like, you're going through life, you're getting checked, and everything's fine, every single appointment. And all of a sudden, one day, it's like, you need to come in surgery soon. So what was that? I mean, what was your like initial reaction to that conversation with your doctor?
Yeah, I remember it kind of being in shock. I remember it crying a bit. I was sitting in his office and I was like, oh no, like I didn't think this was, because at that point it wasn't real. It was just like, I don't have symptoms. I hear this murmur. The doctor said I need surgery. They originally told me like when you're 18, at that point your heart will be pretty much as mature as it will get. So let's do it then. And then I was 19 and 20, and every year up until when I was 27, they kept doing that. So when he said it, at first I was just kind of in shock, and then I was really sad, and I was like, you know what? Because you just kind of, you don't actually ever think it's going to happen to you, even though you've had a doctor tell you every single year this is going to happen to you. You're just like anything else, and like you're kind of reinforced by what happened. So I'm like, nothing happened, and nothing. And so I had that like reinforced thing. So I think that the initial reaction was shock, and then the initial two is that like, oh no, this is bad. And I start looking for what are my chances of surviving this heart surgery? Is this going to be okay? What is going to be the impact of my life after this? And I'd been told earlier that like, I'll go over the actual like what life is like, but before surgery, I thought I'm going to be on warfarin, and I'm going to be, so this blood thinner or anticoagulant is like, that's going to change my life. I'm not going to be able to do the things I love anymore. At that time, I was rock climbing a lot. I was rock, I'm and still do. But at that time, I was rock climbing like 4 to 6 days a week. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do after this? So I guess that initial shock of like, what's going to happen? How is it going to impact my life? And then just initially being really upset and kind of afraid. Yeah, at least that was the initial reaction.
Yeah, of course. And then I'm kind of curious. So I know you said that the doctor kind of made it like a pretty urgent thing. Like just what did they explain to you, like why was it so important that you got in like right away, and the whole timing of it?
Yeah. So there was like a little event. So I said I was asymptomatic. And in general, I had zero symptoms. I had the murmur. Then basically I had one day where I was out in the mountains, and I live at 5,000 feet of elevation, and I think I was probably hiking at 7,000 feet of elevation. I was actually going up to do this rock climb by myself, which is like very mild rock climbing. For anyone that's like a rock climber, it was like this like 5'6" thing that I've soloed a lot. And I was just like walking up with my backpack on and like approaching it. It was in the Flatirons in Boulder, Colorado. And I kind of was like 10 minutes from the base, and I just like was kind of like out of breath. And I was like, okay, it's like a warm day and I have a backpack on and whatever. And then so I kind of sat down for a minute and I couldn't catch my breath. And I was like, this is abnormal. I should not be working this hard to catch my breath. Like I was in decent shape. So I just like I was like, okay, after today, I'm going to leave here. I'm going to call my cardiologist and at least just tell him that this happened. So I guess that was my first ever symptom. And then I kind of went in and I was expecting, because you know, like what you're saying, like there are a lot of symptoms that you have that are cardiac symptoms that you just push them off as, oh, I'm out of shape, or maybe it's just what I ate yesterday, or I didn't sleep a lot last night, or whatever. And you try to like just to, so even though I kind of had this thing before that appointment, and even though you're like, oh yeah, you should obviously have known that you were going to need, you know, it's or that this appointment was going to be different. I didn't even assume that. I was just like, oh yeah, the doctor's going to do the scan, tell me I'm fine. But again, so it was just my first symptom followed by that test that showed my pressure had increased by like twofold in my heart in order to do the work that it needed to supply my body with oxygenated blood. So it was just like, okay, you had a symptom, your heart's working double now. We need to do the surgery. The other thing too, they were monitoring was the size of my left ventricle wall. And my understanding is that because my aorta was preventing all that blood from flowing through, my left ventricle was just doing a lot more work to push that blood through. And maybe I'm getting this wrong anatomically, but so basically they're also worried because what realistically was happening was that that left ventricle was getting, the muscle was building in that left ventricle, which was making the wall thicker and the ventricle itself smaller. And then the regurgitation was more of an issue too. I had blood coming back into the left ventricle. So just looking at all of that, that was when he's like, okay, we have symptoms. We have tests that show, you know, stuff is kind of getting a little bit more severe. So let's do it.
Yeah, interesting. That makes sense. This is interesting to me because I don't know. I'm less familiar with this type of thing, you know, than some of the other diseases. So this is really interesting. So now, you know, you're going for surgery. You come out and, you know, what was that recovery like? Because I had open heart surgery at a similar age, actually, when I was 25, and it was tough. So I'm curious kind of what your recovery was like after that surgery.
Yeah, that I think that's the most daunting part, I believe. And again, so I had that initial shock during the appointment. And I was like, man, I don't know if I'm even going to survive. I don't, do people survive heart surgery? I don't know, because I had never known, I didn't know anyone who had been through heart surgery. Luckily, I did meet two people before surgery that kind of gave me some of their experience. And I was like, oh, okay, there's just like normal people my age who get heart surgery. They survive and they live a full life afterward. So that was really good. But the recovery, I think the mentality of it is the key. I set myself up where I was like, okay, I'm gonna have the surgery at the end of the year. So I have a full, like all of June, all of July, and the beginning of August to recover. And I was just like, I'm going to make it my full-time job to recover from heart surgery. And I set up my house. I like put my bed on the first floor. It was in the basement at first. I like got my like shower, like, you know, made it so I wasn't gonna slip in the bathroom and like all of this stuff. And I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to go. And then I think at that point, I was just like, okay, I can fully commit all of my energy over the next 2 months to recovery. That was the key, was getting set up. And then I think that the biggest, because I was asymptomatic, my heart is young and strong. The biggest thing that I had to recover from was just the opening of the sternum and
The broken ribs.
exactly. Because they really, that's the key. So the initial like heart recovery was not that bad. I was on a beta blocker for a little while, which kind of made me low energy and have a low I'm not sure if it's blood pressure or you're just low
It makes you tired. It makes you tired.
Exactly. So that was kind of tough. But again, I had set myself up and I was like, okay, I'm gonna I have like books I want to read and television I want to watch. And I kind of just like would do as much as I could after surgery, but I never pushed it. I always, and I kind of the key too is that I had friends and family who were there for me and I could kind of rely on them a little bit to help me out and to understand too that like I napped all the time. I would like wake up, maybe make breakfast, and then go nap for a little while. And then I would like wake up and have a little lunch and then go nap again. So that was tough. I think the hardest part was, again, just that sternum. I couldn't drive a car for 5 weeks. I am very active, like hiking and rock climbing and all that stuff. But so like just that adventurous side, I was like, oh, when am I gonna get, like, I never had that thought of like, when am I gonna get back into the mountains and when am I gonna go hiking again? It was instead like, okay, yesterday I made it to the end of the block and I made it all the way back home and I felt fine. So today I'm gonna go to the end of that same block and I'm gonna, for the first time, cross the street. And that's scary because you're like, I don't know if the car is gonna come, I can't walk fast. And then I'm gonna like kind of see how I feel, then maybe cross that street again and come back home. So like those were, I was still like felt adventurous and I still felt like I was doing, you know, these big excursions, but you know, they were only one block from my house and back. So I think the mentality of recovery was key, is that I didn't push it. I didn't say, oh, you know, within 3 months I want to be here. Instead, I would just wake up every day and say, okay, I have this much pain, I have this much energy, let's see what I can do, and kind of just like gradually made my way back into being active again.
So it's such a great mentality. I mean, I like the open heart surgery. I was blown away by how much energy it took for me as well. And like you, we were around the same age, and it's, you know, I was pretty frustrated with it because same thing. Like I thought I was in good shape, and then all of a sudden, like anything you had, you just kind of like felt like you lost it all. Because I was the same way. It was like I would, you know, the funny thing about the ribs was like it's a pain and there's nothing that can be done. There's like, you can't do anything to like heal a broken rib. You just have to wait. And then you have like all your family and friends like around you and they're trying to make you feel better. So they're like making me laugh. And every time I laugh, like my ribs are, I'm like, stop making me laugh. This is not good. It's making it worse.
I even had to, I remember at one point someone was showing me a video, this like funny video. I forget what it was. I wish I could remember what it was, but I was like, you have to leave. Get, like, I can't see you. I can't see your phone. I was like, you have to get out of this room right now. And I'm like, everyone has that sternum pillow. And I'm like holding the sternum pillow and I'm like, you have to leave. Like, I can't laugh. And so, 'cause and you feel fragile too. Like you feel like, even though there is like, in my case, I think it's steel, but there is a metal wire holding my sternum together, and I probably am not going to break it from a good laugh, but you feel like you're going to fall apart. So you're like, and sneezing, I just got so good at never ever sneezing. So I would just like feel a sneeze coming on, and I would just like grab my nose and like do whatever I need, like try like drink water or whatever. Those things that you don't picture as being a big deal, yeah, they kind of hurt. And then the other thing too is like, I think I came in with zero. My expectation was I'm starting at zero and I'm just going to see how I feel the next day. So I like kind of just trained my brain into like never thinking this is where I was and I want to get back here. Instead, I was just like, let's see what, if I wake up after surgery and I'm like able to get out of bed the next day, that's awesome. Let's start there. And then just kind of building back from zero, which I don't know, as like a rock climber who's kind of trying to push their ability level all of the time and trying to get better at this sport, it's actually kind of a relief to start back over because I know what it's like to be able to perform at a high level. That doesn't mean I have to be there right now. It's just nice to start back over and be like, I get to climb all of these classic routes that I didn't have the knowledge of how to climb before that are way easier than anything I would try now. So I kind of just get to be a bad climber again, and I get to be out of shape again, and I get to like build on to it. So it was kind of like a fun, like restarting again, which was at least that mentality. It was nice because I never felt like I had to be somewhere or I had to perform at a certain level, yeah, at that time.
That's and one thing you said, which I've never heard it explained this way, but it makes total sense, is like you do feel so fragile. Like you feel like you're gonna fall apart, and like you go from, and then being at 25, being like 25, 26, you know, in your 20s, it's a pretty brutal feeling or miserable feeling to have. It's like, 'cause you like, out here like working out, you're doing all these great things, you feel great about yourself, and all of a sudden it's like you feel like you can't like walk across the street because you're gonna fall apart. It's like, takes a lot of like mental toll on you. But that's it's interesting. So Do you remember your first, like how long or when your first climb was post open heart surgery?
Yeah, so I basically I didn't do any. I took it super slow, and I was like, my doctor said, do not use. Basically, after heart open heart surgery, I was told to not use my arms for too much for 5 weeks. Just basically the time it takes for a bone to heal and to fuse together, because my cardiac surgeon wanted me to come in and take a look at my sternum to make sure it had fused and that it was good to go. So yeah, basically my first climb after surgery, my brother was in town, and that must have been my birthday. So it's probably in like August or like almost September. So just like 3 months after surgery, just about. And he was in town and his friend was there. And I was like, okay, my doctor just cleared me. He said that I can drive a car. I can't. The key was, he said, you cannot break your sternum at this point from anything that you're doing. You know, you get hit by like a airbag or, you know, the way people break their sternum usually, but he's like, you're fused up, you're good to go. So, but I had no muscle. And I also in climbing, I think your ability comes from your trust in not just your hand strength, but also your footwork. And I hadn't climbed anything for many months. So anyway, my brother was in town and there was this, again, I was starting over again. I was a bad climber. I was horrible. So I went up and I did this thing that I wouldn't even usually use a rope for, but I went up and I climbed. And I remember at one point, because most of it's like pretty angled, so you're kind of just like really steep hiking up this thing and your footwork is in place and you're kind of using your hands to pull yourself up. And I was using a rope because I was with my brother, and it was nice because there was like one point where it gets a little bit vertical, and I had to do like two moves of like putting my arm over my head and like moving up, and I was like, okay, that didn't hurt at all, and it was fine. And we basically climbed this like 800-foot rock face and then rappelled off, and I was like, okay, I think there's no problem, and I think I'm ready to go. So it was just like doing this really, really simple but kind of long day out with my brother, which included a lot of hiking too. And I was like, okay, that feels fine. I shouldn't push it. I shouldn't expect to be a good climber anytime soon, but there's no excuse to not go out and do really simple things. So it's probably 3, maybe 2.5 months after surgery is when I did that.
That's good. So I want to talk about like everything you're doing now, but before, so I know nothing about rock climbing. Could you give me like a I don't know, just like a summary of like, could you like, I don't even know what you mean when you say like an easy climb to like, I guess where you start as like someone that's just starting rock climbing to like, for you, the point that like ultimately you want to get to, if there's a way to explain that. And I don't know if there is, but
It's tough. There is this semi-subjective system to measuring the difficulty of routes. And there's a lot of different directions you can go in rock climbing. That's why I really love this sport, because basically there's like this idea of anything that's fifth class, so a 5 point something is how we measure it. Fifth class means you need a rope, because it's so vertical that if you fall, you will fall to the ground. Anything before that might be what we'd call like third class or fourth class, which is like maybe a little bit more angled, so much that if you fell, you'd probably just land on the ground or you'd like slide a little bit and be fine. So fifth class is like 5.0. If I ever say it, so I said like I did a 5.6, that's like a pretty mellow climb for me. That scale goes all the way up to 5.15, which only a few people in the world can climb. What I would say, like professional rock climbers are probably climbing like 5.13 to 5.14 usually. And then what I can climb is like up to 5.12, like the beginning of 5.12. And then there's a bunch of climbing before that. So basically, the difficulty comes from the size of the holds. Sometimes it's like very vertical wall and you're holding on to something that's like the size of half of your fingertip. And then just like maybe it comes from too, like how high you have to get your foot up to get onto the next, you know, how flexible you have to be. So yeah, basically the grading system comes from how challenging a route is, anywhere from 5-0 up to 5-15. And then there's also like, those routes can be 35 feet tall, or they can be 3,000 feet tall. And then that just depends on like how much time you have to spend on that route is basically the other factor too.
And I'd imagine being in Colorado, that's probably the one of the prime places to rock climb.
Yeah, I think that yeah, California and Colorado or and Utah and all that, Nevada, all those areas have some of the best rock climbing. I think the best for like for me, like my quality of life and the cost of living and all that stuff, I think Colorado is the best place
Nice.
for doing all of that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Now back to the hard stuff. So, you're 5 years, you're about 5 years post open heart surgery and
Right.
surgery corrected. So just kind of tell us, how your life is now, what you're doing, and everything you have going on.
Yeah, so now I've gotten back to the point where I had like a little knee injury recently and like a little tendon issue, but in general, I am right now stronger at better at climbing than I have ever been. And I think with a murmur and with a knowing that I had the aortic aneurysm, I was kind of holding myself back a little bit. But right now, I can kind of push it and just physically do as hard a route as my tendons and muscles and knees and stuff will allow me to
All the
do.
other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I can just go kind of push it like a normal person. But yeah, how am I doing now is like I feel stronger at climbing than I've ever been. And then I'm also the interesting part of climbing is like you need experience. You need to get better and better as you go. So I'm at the point now too where I feel like I have enough experience to start really pushing and trying like longer routes. And after heart surgery, I have done like big mountain stuff too. Like I've climbed Mount Rainier and I've climbed a bunch of other volcanoes in the Pacific Northwest. I also last year, well, not like, I guess it was about a year and a couple of months ago, in October of maybe 2019, I climbed El Cap for the first time in Yosemite Valley, which is, yeah, it's 3,200 vertical feet. And took me 3 full days of rock climbing from like 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. basically every day for 3 days to get up this wall. And actually, because I'm at a point now where I'm physically and experience-wise a little bit like ready to kind of push the rock climbing thing, I actually excitedly took off next year as like a little mini retirement to start pushing that a little bit further, just seeing how good I can get at this sport. From really dedicating to it. So right now I'm, better than I've ever been with less restrictions than I've ever had, except I'm on an anticoagulant, but that really has not impacted my life too much.
Yeah, and how often do you have to check in with your doctors?
Yeah, I'm actually at the point right now where I do my yearly checkup. So I a few days ago got an echocardiogram
Nice.
and they scan the valve and scan everything in my the cardiac nurse wrote back to me and said, basically, your heart is as good as it's been or better.
That's great.
So I just do that. I do a yearly checkup. I do a yearly, and then I think basically a yearly echocardiogram and then a bi-yearly check-in with my cardiologist. Usually he'll just look at it and be like, awesome, good to go. Do you have symptoms? And I'll say no. And he'll say, okay, let's talk next year again.
That's great. That's great. Okay, so last couple things. So just obviously for the purpose of the show is to kind of talk about, everything you've talked about, of course, but like have other people talk about like the obstacles that come with heart disease and kind of what have how people overcome them. So I'm just curious, for first two things, what you think your biggest physical obstacle throughout the whole course of your life really has been because you've been living with heart disease. And then the biggest mental obstacle, living with heart disease.
Yeah, so again, luckily I was pretty asymptomatic before surgery. So physical obstacles, I did not have very many because I had limited myself before that. So I never lifted weights to the point where I passed out. And then I was like, oh, now I have this physical obstacle. Instead, I kind of just navigated my life a little bit to avoid any possible physical obstacles. And I think that that may have been it, that it was just like limiting some of the things that I could do before surgery, just because I didn't want to have my heart have to work too hard for that ventricle wall to get too thick. So I think that that was the biggest thing, was just limiting the obstacles that I would encounter, if that makes sense. And because I did that, because, and I always have had an interest in being healthy, because I know that being healthy is like, that means I can hike further and climb more, and I was kayaking for a while and all of this stuff, like I could just perform better. So the other physical barriers of like, oh, you have to be in shape and you have to whatever, that basically that all came naturally because I liked being outside and I loved performing at a higher level. So really staying healthy, all that stuff made it so, and avoiding the obstacles that my doctor put in, or avoiding the, like, I guess, or just accepting the restrictions my doctor put in place, helped me avoid any physical issues.
Cool.
The mental, though, I think before surgery, again, I didn't have a lot of symptoms. I think that one of the challenges was, when I was young, I was just like, don't ask the doctor questions, just accept what they say. And, you know, use what I think one big change in mentality, at least, was that when I was like, okay, I love rock climbing, I love doing it, it's the best days of my life are spent out doing this activity. So instead of going to the doctor and saying, can I rock climb? Instead, going in and saying, what symptoms am I looking for? What should I be worried about? You know, what should I avoid? All that stuff. That was a big change mentally, was that idea of like having your doctor, who has never probably rock climbed or has never done this activity that you want, just kind of get it, and actually having a conversation with them about like, what am I actually avoiding? Because it's easy for your doctor to say, don't rock climb because it puts out too much of a physical strain. But then you do it and you're like, I'm not actually strained physically at all. I'm just like, you know, it's more like ballet than it is like weightlifting. But they don't understand that. And it's okay to never, I don't ever question my doctor's diagnosis or anything like that. But I do just ask them questions of like, well, why am I restricted here? And what is this? So I think that was one of the big mental obstacles, was switching that mentality of like asking questions. And then like never going against doctor. Right, you know, they've spent decades of their life studying hearts. They know what they're talking about and they know what to do. But to just ask, maybe they don't know anything about this activity I want to do. So asking them like how those two things interact, that's the one big mental thing. I think the other one too is when I was recovering from heart surgery, again, not, I think some people come out and they're like, I want to run a marathon within a year. Or I am going to blank, and they set this goal, and you're like, "What? You've never recovered from heart surgery in your life? Why would, or maybe you have, maybe some people have multiple heart surgeries, and that's common. But why would you set this goal? Why not just come out and say, day one, I'm starting over." And I think that was the big mental changes. Like you come out and you're like, "I'm athletic, and I'm whatever, and I want to get back to here." I came out and I was like, "No, I'm a professional." Like heart surgery recoverer right now. That's it. That's my job. I'm doing it every day and I'm doing the best I can. I'm not, that doesn't mean pushing myself, put past my limit, but that means eating healthy, doing what the doctor says, sleeping as much as I can. That's my job. So I think changing that mentality of like, I want to be here, instead to like, I'm going to get really good at recovering from heart surgery, and dedicating your entire life to that for a little while is like one of the big things. Because then everything is like, it's not like, oh, I want to be here. Instead, it's like, yesterday I was at this level and now I'm a tiny bit better. If you keep concentrating on like, I'm not here yet, I gained this weight, I can't run, I can't even walk, instead just being like, yesterday this is where I woke up in a hospital bed with a tube, today I stood up out of that bed, we're making progress. And like, I never had the thought of this is where I want to be by a certain date or anything like that. I think that that mentality in anything in our life really is just like, it's something that gets you a little bit more self-deprecating. Like, I should be here and I'm not, or whatever. And I think that is a really hard mentality to live with, where doing it the other way is just a lot easier.
Definitely. That's awesome. Cool. Well, I appreciate it. You know, I really appreciate you coming on, Bob, because I think the goal of the podcast is to help educate other heart disease patients, spread awareness, and most importantly is to help people, you know, take their diagnosis, take what happens and get back to living like a pretty normal life. And I think I love what you kind of just talked about, because I think it's great advice for anybody. Like, don't have like, you know, expectations other than like, let's improve every single day. And let's not say, okay, I need to be at a certain place by a certain point, but like, let it happen, improve, take the time physically and mentally, and help, you know, eventually you're going to get yourself back to that normal place. And honestly, you're the perfect example of that. You went from, you know, your early diagnosis to, you know, some limitations when you were a kid to this surprising surgery when you're like in great shape, doing something that you love, worried that you might never get back to it, and you're back doing it better than ever now, which is awesome. So, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was awesome. I really appreciate it too.
Cool. And best of luck. We're excited to hear about the year of rock climbing, see how you improve, and maybe you'll be maybe you'll be what, 5'5", 13, 5'14. You get the pro level. I don't know.
I don't know about that. I don't even know if that's the goal. I think it's just to have fun for a year.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Like anything in life, the goal is to improve. Please provide any feedback you have, any topics you want to hear, or any guests that can provide value to our listeners. You can message us on Instagram at A Big Heart Podcast, or send us an email at mike@inaheartbeat.org. To learn more about In a Heartbeat and the programs we provide, please visit www.inaheartbeat.org. That is www.inaheartbeat.org.